Venerable sirs and venerable sister also, and dear friends in the Dhamma, good evening everyone, and once again welcome to this retreat in my own name rather than in the name from the Bhavana Society. We are going to have a little introduction at first about meditation, as this is an introductory course to meditation. I would like to just see for a moment if there are people who have never meditated yet amongst you, if you could just raise your hand if you have never meditated. So that seems clear, nobody has never meditated. And then are there people who are doing a retreat for the first time? Oh, that's just about everybody, almost everybody. So that's interesting, just for my own information. Now, meditation has different meanings in different traditions, different connotations. So perhaps it's a good idea to first talk about the word meditation and then to see what kind of meditation we are supposed to be doing here, and then take it from there. So meditation you find in different traditions. There are Christian meditations, there are Sufi meditations, there is Hindu meditation, transcendental meditation, there is Zen meditation, Tibetan meditation, Korean and what have you, different kinds of meditation. And in the Buddhist meditation, we also find some differences between the Mahayana school of Buddhism and Theravada school of Buddhism. So we actually are within the Theravada school of Buddhism, but that doesn't mean that our meditation is exclusively practiced only by Theravadan Buddhists. The meditation that we do is also practiced in Mahayana Buddhist schools. Can everybody hear me, by the way, in the back? I don't see any hands there. Or you can. So, the meditation in Buddhism, as we practice it, can again be divided into different types. One type is called tranquility meditation, and the other type is called insight meditation. Tranquility meditation, sometimes mentioned in the original Pali name Samatha Bhavana. Bhavana meaning development of your mind, and Samatha means tranquility. So translated as tranquility meditation is any technique which will give some kind of peace of mind to you for some time by using any technique which will lead to that. And there are different kinds of techniques, and some of them actually we are also going to practice. But there are quite a few more that we are not going to practice, but you could find them in the books like The Path to Purification, the Visuddhimagga has a whole enumeration of all the different types of meditation that you could practice. But here we will probably restrict ourselves to, for instance, the Metta Bhavana, that is the development of loving kindness, or what is called unconditional love for all beings. And that is considered a tranquility meditation because reflecting upon the qualities of metta or unconditional love for all beings, or sometimes called the development of loving kindness or friendliness. The word metta actually comes from the Sanskrit word mitra, and mitra means friend. So if you consider all beings as your friend, then you are practicing metta bhavana or mitra bhavana. So the metta bhavana is considered a tranquility meditation because that good quality of wishing oneself to be free from negativities and full of peace and happiness and well-being gives some kind of peace to our mind. and it builds up a kind of tranquility with a good, what we call, skillful state in your mind. And it may not lead to what we call deeper levels of meditation, such as in some other tranquility meditation techniques, what they are called, the dhyanas, or deep absorptions, because it is a kind of cerebral activity that you do in your mind when you are wishing yourself to be free from this, that, and the other, and then may I be well, peaceful, and happy, and you wish that to other beings as well, then there is some kind of thinking process going on. Whereas in other types of tranquility meditation, you may not have that word or verbal activity in your mind going on, but rather just a kind of concentration on a particular object. And that is, again, either an external object. In some meditation techniques, you could actually look at something externally, like a candle flame, for instance, or a flower, or maybe a dish of water, or a dish of earth, or some object, maybe a Buddha statue or a painting, a picture of the Buddha, or whatever, an external object, that could give some tranquility to your mind if you exclude other objects like sounds, thoughts, feelings, and things like that, and you keep on focusing your attention again and again on that particular chosen object, then you actually may get into what is called deeper tranquility on the absorption into that object. And then there are objects which are internal, within your body. Could be in your physical body, it could be also in your mind. So, for instance, the very general technique of anapanasati bhavana, the meditation on the development of mindfulness on the breathing, is an internal object that is within your body. It's a physical object, and it is always with you. It's a natural kind of object. You don't create it. It's not made up of any kind of visualization or verbalization. It's just something that you can feel. So we have been breathing actually from the very first moment of our life, and we will be breathing till we breathe out our last, and I hope that will be in a long distant future for everyone. Don't stop breathing during the retreat, please. It is just an observation of our breath that is called anapanasati, or the mindfulness of breathing. And it is not a kind of breathing exercise, but it is rather the development of mindfulness. In some techniques, for instance in yoga, you find pranayama techniques which are meant to regulate your breathing and sometimes deepen the breath and follow the breath and hold the breath and do all kinds of things with the breath. But in anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, it is basically using the sati or mindfulness. Now that's a very crucial and central word in our type of meditation, sati. So anapanasati means in and out breathing, mindfulness. So in English the word mindfulness comes first, mindfulness of in and out breath. But it's not so much that you follow the breath inside and outside of your body, but rather feel it where it touches. And even there, you find different schools of anapanasati. Sorry that it becomes a little bit complicated, but it's good maybe to mention it, and some of you may be familiar also with it. And then we have to choose a particular technique to stick to, because I cannot teach two things at the same time. Which doesn't mean that you have to follow this particular technique if you're already familiar with the other technique. So what are these two schools, basically? One is the feeling of the breath inside your nostrils, where the air is touching as you're breathing in with a closed mouth. I hope you don't have any nose colds, because then it becomes a little bit difficult and you may have to open your mouth to breathe in and out. But normally, if your nose is clear, then we are breathing in through the nose. And then you can feel a certain subtle sensation of touch of the air touching the inside of your nose, either near the tip of your nose or inside the nostrils somewhere, or maybe even on the upper lip, depending on the shape of your nose and the speed of your breath, for instance. And that becomes, how insignificant it may seem or may sound, the main focus for your practice in the beginning of this meditation retreat, anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, and trying to feel that breath. Now, we have been breathing from the beginning of our life, and how often have we actually paid attention to it? Or how often have we been grateful to our breath? If you wouldn't be breathing, you wouldn't be sitting here, actually speaking. So a certain amount of gratitude towards the breath is also very important, and also a careful and kind attention to the breath is also important in the development of mindfulness of breathing. And just think that it is the most important thing in the world, for the time being at least. There may be more important things later on, but when you are practicing mindfulness of breathing, just see as if this is the most important thing in the world, and try to discover what you can all around sort of the tip of your nose. The other technique, which I should also mention in contradistinction to this, but which we are not really practicing, at least I'm not teaching it, but should be mentioned, is the technique of watching the rising and the falling of the abdomen, not with your eyes, but with your mind, the feeling of the rising and the falling of the abdomen as you're breathing in and out. That is one technique which has been used in certain schools of Buddhist meditation from the school of Mahasi Sayadaw in Burma, for instance, and his followers. And I'm actually not quite sure which school is being followed here by most. The touch of the breath inside the nostrils, or the rising and falling of the abdomen. The touch in the nostrils is being taught, as you may know, and you may be familiar with, the name of S.N. Goenka, Satya Narayan Goenka, or Mr. Goenka. He is Burmese-born of Indian extraction, a very famous Vipassana meditation teacher, and he teaches this Anapanasati as a part of the first introduction to meditation for a 10-day course. They spend the first 3 full days on just anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, and inside the nostrils or around that little triangular area, wherever you feel it, inside or near the tip of your nose or on the upper lip. And that is their technique, which also was taught by his teacher, Uba Khin, and apparently comes closer to what the Buddha taught: establish your mindfulness in front of you. Now, when you have your sitting posture, the nose sort of sticks out in front of you. And that, if you put your attention on that, that means you focus your attention in that very small area. And of course, you will soon find out that that is not the only thing that is happening in your body and mind. Although you might try to give it your full attention, most likely your mind will not really stay on that very subtle little insignificant object of the breath. And there will be other things that you become aware of. Now here it's very, very quiet, absolutely quiet place. But sometimes you may still hear some sound, or even the noise within your own mind, for instance, or your thoughts, or some pain in the knee or in the back. or maybe some other things, an emotion, whatever it may be, you will find other objects. And, well, if you think that they are distractions and that they are disturbing your meditation, in a way you're right, in the sense that if you want to completely have your attention on the breath and it doesn't happen, then you can see it as a distraction or a disturbance. But fortunately, the Buddha also taught that anapana is not the only thing that we have to be aware of. There are these other objects such as sounds, thoughts, feelings or sensations in the body that we also can become aware of. But as a kind of training for our mind, a kind of exercise to increase your span of attention on one chosen object and to increase your power of concentration, we still would say try to not go with the other objects at the beginning of your practice. Try to come back as much as possible to that chosen object and get as much as possible absorbed in that one little object of the feeling or the sensation of the breath inside your nostrils as a starting technique. And there are different kinds of techniques which I will probably explain and guide during the guided meditations. I usually will say a few things during the meditation, not sort of explain everything beforehand and then you just practice it silently afterwards, but during the meditation I will be doing some guidance. So these are called guided meditations. And in the mornings also, when we are sitting in the group and I'm here, then some of it will be with the guidance. So to remind you actually of the technique that we are supposed to be practicing. And also because very often your mind may sort of drift away to the past, the so-called future, or daydreaming. And with my voice then reminding you of what we are doing, maybe you can come back to that precious and present moment and not find out that afterwards, oh, I've been thinking all the time, I've been dreaming all the time, but rather to pull your attention back to the present moment. And the present moment is actually very, very important in the Buddha's teachings also, because basically we cannot do anything about the past, I should say, in the United States, but sometimes you may forgive my British and Sinhalese accent, half Dutch, Sinhalese and whatever British accent. So you cannot really do anything about the past, and you cannot really do anything in the future now. So what you have actually is the present moment, where you can choose something. Choose to do something, choose to think something, or choose to say something. Now in this retreat, although it is a silent retreat, we also have these question and answer periods. So I came to the conclusion that you are supposed to hand in your questions and leave them at the notice board area, and then I will answer them. So actually that involves no talking on your part also, just the writing of the question. But suppose that we don't have enough questions sometimes, and if there is an urgent question sometimes, you might use that time also to ask a question verbally, so that doesn't need to disturb the silence. What does disturb the silence if you start sort of talking about what you did last year on your holidays and what plans you have for the future, and then chit-chat about this and that in between each other. And even when you feel the need sometimes to share your enlightenment experience or your difficulties with others and start comparing your practice with others, that also can be quite disturbing in the practice of the meditation, because of the silence, you are more impressionable when it comes to hearing things from other people, and then you might not really be able to focus on what you are doing yourself as well as when you just keep to yourself. So I would say, in addition, what has been said about the silence is, enjoy that time that you don't have to talk to anybody and that you don't have to listen to anybody else, and just have a sort of a breather or a period of time all to yourself where you can focus on yourself, not in a sort of selfish way, but rather to relax into the present moment and not feel the need all the time to, you know, talk to other people, compare or judge or whatever. So that is another aspect of our meditation retreat. It is supposed to be a silent meditation, but also with a relaxed silence, not a sort of enforced silence that, you know, everybody's watching you and you shouldn't say anything, but just to be glad that you don't have to say anything for some time. These days are so rare and so precious that it is a good idea not to sort of disturb them for yourself or for others. So the techniques that we are following and the kind of meditation that we will be practicing after the initial day with metta bhavana and anapanasati will be the extension of our awareness to the other objects, which are also part and parcel of the meditation practice. The development of mindfulness on body, feelings, mind, and mind objects. In the Pali language, we would say kaya anusati, vedana anusati, citta anusati, and dhamma anusati. So kaya is body, vedana is feeling, citta is mind, and dhamma is, well, quite a lot of things actually, a number of things sometimes translated as mind objects, but it is also including, for instance, well, to get an insight into the Four Noble Truths, sometimes into how cause and effect works, or into the characteristics of change, what we call impermanence or anicca. You know, when you look at your own body and mind, you start seeing how things are changing quickly. Maybe not so much the body, but the mind and the feelings and the thoughts, everything is in a flux. So we should not get flustered by that, but it's just a discovery that you get. If you try to focus on one object like the breathing, then you might start noticing how many things are going on in your mind that you might not notice when you are busy in your daily life, because usually that is covered up. But here it becomes quite apparent. And in this practice, we should try not to pour fuel onto a fire, so to speak, not to put more fuel onto the fire of, you know, thoughts and emotions, but just to be aware of them, and in the first day or two, just let them go, not to pay too much attention to them. Say, now I'm trying to watch my breath, and that is my main focus, and let the other things come and go, and not to be too much concerned about them or engaged in them. And later on, when we start expanding the practice towards, for instance, what is called being aware of your feelings or sensations, physical sensations, then we do a technique which is called sweeping the body meditation, similar to, well, Mr. Goenka's sweeping the body meditation, and similar to John Kabat-Zinn's sort of scanning the body, which is being used in what's called mindfulness-based stress reduction therapy. And that is some of the aspects of the meditation that we are doing. This is, you see, to see the distinction between samatha bhavana or tranquility meditation and insight meditation or vipassana bhavana. Vipassana means insight or looking into, and that is actually the kind of meditation that we are aiming at, that we get insight into the reality of body and mind, and insight into these characteristics of change, for instance, and some other characteristics, which we will discover later on. All these things that are based on the development of mindfulness. Now, mindfulness, for your information, but I suppose since you're all English speakers, is not a mind full of things, by the way. But you already knew that, most probably. Mindfulness in the sense of attention, awareness, to be aware of something. And that is in our body and mind, the most unconditioned thing, or the least conditioned thing. It is not based on some kind of thought or idea or concept or a judgment. It's just observing the things as they are. So it's like a neutral observer in a way. That mindfulness is the crucial factor in our practice. Therefore it is called the development of mindfulness on body, feelings, mind and objects. So that would lead to an insight which can help us to actually overcome the causes of our suffering and dissatisfaction. The Buddha was teaching various things, and we will go one by one in the evening talks into the teachings of the Buddha also, but he was basically showing a way out of our suffering and towards a peaceful happiness. So by practicing just tranquility meditation, what we do is we sort of cover up the suffering and we try to get into a peaceful state, a tranquil state. And that is, in a way, a suppression of thought, you could say. And maybe it will lead only to a peace of the mind. But never mind, that is good enough for the beginning. And maybe not real peace of mind, which comes from freedom from greed, hatred and delusion. So if we start with a peace of the mind by practicing tranquility meditation, that's a good start. And then based on that tranquility, we can then proceed with the development of mindfulness on body, feelings and mind, for instance. So that is the kind of progression that we will have during these 5 days, isn't it, that we are practicing together. And other things about the meditation maybe can come later. I would like to have a little look about the timing that we have. We do have quite a bit of time. So perhaps I should say a few more things about the meditation. We do have what is called sitting meditation, and we have the walking meditation. And actually I also teach something called standing meditation. Between the sitting and the walking, one gets up and stands for a while with a bit of guidance and just become aware of standing, the body standing. And that is part and parcel also of the teachings of the Buddha when he is teaching the Satipatthana Sutta, that is the teaching on the development of mindfulness. He says, be aware of your body, whether it is sitting or standing, walking, lying down, whether you're eating or talking or bungee jumping or whatever you may be doing, cleaning or sweeping or keeping silent. If that is the case, be aware of the body. And also be aware of your verbal activities, what you say. And of course, here it is more of what you're not saying, maybe, in this retreat, to be aware also of being silent. And then being silent with the mouth doesn't mean that we are silent in our mind. Sometimes you become more aware of the thoughts that are coming up in your mind. And there can be zillions of thoughts coming through your mind in a short time. The mind is very, very fast, and each moment of consciousness is very, very short. The Buddha said, actually, there are more moments of consciousness in the wink of an eye than grains of sand in the banks of the Ganges. Now, the Ganges is a very long river. It ends up in Calcutta, and it starts in the Himalayas, and some of the banks are made of rocks, but a lot of it is also sand. It depends how deep you dig, how many grains of sand you get. But probably what the Buddha meant to say is that there are uncountable moments of consciousness or mind moments in the blink of an eye. And nowadays they've come up with a little bit more of a scientific figure. I don't know whether it's really true, but that there are 17 trillion mind moments per second. So that's quite a lot. I've never tried to count them myself, and I wouldn't advise you also to try and count them, but you will see that there's a lot of things bubbling in this subconscious mind sometimes, which becomes conscious during the meditation, and things that are coming up, and one thing after another, either a thought or a feeling or a sound. Basically, as you know, but I remember that I didn't know it when I went to India the first time, that I have 6 senses. Did you know that? Maybe all of you know that. But so you have the sense of sight, of sound, of smell, of taste, of touch, and of thought. 6 senses. The 6th sense would be the mind. And the others are called the physical senses. So basically, also what the Buddha said, we have 6 types of consciousnesses. Either you hear something, or you see something, or you smell something, taste something, or you feel something, or you think something. So in this retreat, when we are closing our eyes, and that is one way that we are meditating, usually with closed eyes when we're sitting, not like in the Zazen technique where they keep the eyes slightly open and they face the wall, we are sitting with the eyes closed, gently closed, we call it. But even then, you would have sometimes visual impressions from your own mind, or you might see the light through your eyelids, or you may hear little sounds, or, well, once you have your eyes closed and you're sitting down and you're not doing much, and it is very quiet, you hardly have any sounds, you hardly have any smells or tastes, so probably you have basically the feeling of your body, and the thoughts in your mind and the sensations in your nose to be aware of. What else? The other objects might come from time to time, but here you are already reducing actually the number of things. So in our day-to-day life, very often, nowadays more and more, people are multitasking. And here we are supposed to do one thing at a time. But since the moments of consciousness are going on very fast, there may be a lot of things happening within your body and mind that look as if they're going parallel to each other. It's something like when you have Bengali fireworks and you sort of make a circle, it looks like a circle in your eyes, but there's no circle. And when you are looking at your mind, maybe you find that there's a lot of things going on at the same time, but it actually happens moment after moment after moment after moment. But it goes so fast that it looks like one bundle of things going on. But that's a technicality. But sometimes if you increase your mindfulness, you start seeing how these things come and go one by one also. So this is jumping a little bit ahead of your experience. Maybe you don't have that experience at the beginning. It's not meant to be like creating an expectation that it has to be like that, you know, after 1 or 2 days. We actually, in the meditation, should take things as they come and as they are from moment to moment, not to sort of go ahead in time, not to anticipate the future, but to just be in the present moment. The present moment is more than enough, and the rest, what we do usually is we think about the past, and very often with some kind of regret or with some kind of hurt or maybe flattery, some psychological memories, and that becomes sometimes quite a burden. So we're asking you to leave that burden. When you meet it, you see, this is just psychological memory. We're not here to do psychoanalysis and psychotherapy in that sense of going back in time and then blaming our parents for everything and things like that, but rather to be aware that this is present now in the form of a thought, for instance, or an emotion, and sort of letting go of it, because this is past, past is past. And regarding the future, we have this psychological planning, which is very often based on hopes and fears. You know, you hope that this may happen, or you fear that such a thing might happen, or what might other people think of me, or can I really do it? That is also a kind of a burden which we should let go of. So basically, that is something that we, you know, like an application for our daily life later on also. Now jumping towards when you leave the retreat, then also you have learned already from the observation of your own mind that sometimes you just go back to the past psychologically and it becomes like a problem or a burden. Or you anticipate the future psychologically and it becomes a burden. So we should try to have just what is called technical memory as much as possible, the things that you really need to know, like your subjects that you need to know, the language, how to get from A to B, how to recognize your friends and your parents and your wife and husband if you have, and things like that, to know what you need to know, but not the psychologically tainted kind of memories there to be set aside, at least for the moment. And similarly for the future also, if you have to do something and you need to do anything in the world, you usually have to plan something. Even to get here, to come for this retreat, you have to plan so many things. But the planning of the technical part is one thing, and the psychological planning, yes, will I get enlightened, or what might happen, or you know, this or that, are kind of extra burdens. So if you can let go of those psychological past and futures, then you are more and more in the present moment, and therefore you will be able to really get more out of the retreat and out of your practice also. Be able to focus on the present moment. And the present moment says that it is about 8:15 almost, and maybe we should get to the part where we are taking what is called the 8 precepts. Now, the Buddhists in their tradition have different kinds of precepts, what is called. It's not a command, like you have the 10 commandments, for instance, in Judaism and in Christianity, where somebody tells you what not to do from above. But in Buddhism, it is an individual kind of decision where you say, the formulation goes like this: I try to observe the precept of abstaining from, and then you get a number of things which are considered to be unskillful or no good, like taking life or killing, stealing, or taking things which don't belong to you, sexual misconduct, lying, or taking intoxicants, And in this case, those are the five precepts which most Buddhists around the world try to observe. And if they break them, then they can take them again and again and again. But it is meant to be a sort of stimulus to be more mindful of your actions, your words, and your thoughts. And then in the retreat situation, we have the precepts of not taking food after 12 or after noon, just liquids. And not the intoxicant types, but more the healthy ones. And also to abstain from, you know, dance and entertainment and all kinds of jewelry and beautification and things like that. So another thing is not to use luxurious seats and beds, but keep it simple.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.